Chapter 26. Captain Verena Fonden was not even surprised to see Ottavio Scarandum darken her doorway. She was dismayed and apprehensive, for she knew an already busy day was about to get complicated.
Ottavio, to what do I owe the displeasure of your presence this morning?
Scarandum affected being hurt, dipping his antennas and hanging his head.
Verena, that is unfair. Why, I am merely here to assist you.
Assist?
Yes.
Your job is to secure those ships. He pointed toward the display on the wall showing a cluster of obsolete warships, many of them surrounded by tugs and crews working outside in spacesuits and robotic maintenance drones. They had all been working to confirm the ships were in a safe condition to be transferred to the humans. Now they had halted those activities and were awaiting new instructions.
Yes, mostly I am just returning them to long-term storage condition. That is a BU-ship function.
She referred to her home unit, the Bureau of Ships.
Why is ECO here?
To assist you, as I said. ECO has technicians available?
Sadly, no.
He shook his head.
We are here to provide security.
Security, she blinked.
What are you concerned about?
Verena, the galaxy is full of nefarious characters. Her response was to stare directly at him.
Yes.
He understood her meaning.
We are merely here to prevent anyone from stealing those ships, or, let's just say, stealing as many of those ships that could be made minimally flightworthy within the next,
he glanced at the clock on the wall, 14 hours or less, if you know what I mean. Her antennas stood straight up.
Oh, crap.
You can understand my concern, then.
Nefarious characters, huh?
They are everywhere, I am sad to say.
My orders from the home fleet,
she tapped a claw on the hard surface of the desk, making a clicking sound, are to secure those ships and return them to storage.
Correct. However, home fleet recognizes that you have been working very hard. You should take some time off, such as 14 hours. If you know what I mean.
Ottavio, the government decided not to assist the humans. They made an official and very public announcement of the new policy.
Yes, it is true that announcement was public and official.
If you know what I mean. She sighed, leaning back on her couch.
Home Fleet is hedging their bets. Complying with the request from the Rindaloo while helping the humans in case we need them in the future?
I have no idea what you mean. However, if I were in charge of Home Fleet, I would at least consider such an action. Unofficially, of course.
I will not be receiving these unofficial orders in writing, will I?
Again, I have no idea what you are talking about. Perhaps you have been working too hard. You should take some time off.
Like 14 hours?
Yes, or less, if possible.
Crap.
While I am taking time off, do you have any suggestions for what I might do to relax?
Scarandum smiled.
Well, I could use help with identifying which of those ships would be the most likely targets for nefarious characters who might want to steal them in the next 14 hours or less. If you know what I mean.
I have no idea what you are talking about, if you know what I mean.
I do.
Ottavio, she sighed. I have to admit, I have missed working with you.
Vina, ECO always has a place for someone like you.
My job is here.
You wouldn't have to leave your job, he hinted.
This job is already too complicated, but...
She smiled at him.
Thank you for the offer.
Anytime.
I mean that.
14 hours,
Preferably less.
Then, I had better get started on relaxing. U.S. Army Brigadier General Lynn Bezenson was not appreciating any of the privileges associated with being a general officer. At the moment, she was not appreciating anything about her situation. Her boots were above her ankles and thick black mud with cold water seeping into her socks. That area of Lemuria was swampy, which is why the hamsters had set it aside for humans. "What do you mean, gone?" she demanded of the four hapless soldiers standing at attention in front of her. She did not actually expect an answer. Of the four, three were U.S. Army and one Marine. With everyone's length of service having been extended, they were all specialists or corporal in the case of the Marine. Remaining true to the creed of the E4 Mafia, none of them had any idea what happened to the supplies UNEF had provided for the purpose of constructing air raid shelters. They were supposed to have shelters dug into the soggy soil with a dry, solid floor and a thick ceiling, with native logs and at least a meter of dirt on top. Instead, all she saw was a half-assed beginning of digging a hole, which was filled with water, and the sides had slumped in. "Well?" she demanded again, more out of curiosity over whether all four would wisely keep their mouths shut, or one would crack under pressure and spit out whatever bullshit story they had cooked up. "It's like..." Socialist Yossarian stumbled over his words, staring straight ahead. "The stuff was there. Then it was gone, you know? I mean, ma'am. General, ma'am." "I am General Bezinson, Specialist." She tried to glare at the idiot, but one corner of her mouth might have curled up in a smile of amusement. "So you are telling me that the still I found in the woods over there," she pointed to a grove of trees with a well-worn trail leading to it, "where you are cooking illegal moonshine and the shelter covering that still, were not made with those construction supplies?"
I...
Yossarian's eyes flicked to his fellows, who were all simultaneously staring straight ahead and telling him to shut the hell up.
We don't know nothing about moonshine, ma'am."
"You don't know anything, Specialist. If you are going to insult my intelligence, please use proper grammar."
Yossarian's face was blank.
"Oh," Bezinson snorted. "This is hopeless." Really, it was the fault of UNEF HQ. Secure in knowing the Ruhar had an SD network around the planet and a battle group stationed overhead, headquarters had let standards slip. Especially recently, when everyone knew they were all going home. Why bother maintaining shelters or even inspecting whether shelters had been constructed? Then the Maxulks destroyed a transport ship carrying more than 300 humans, and no one knew when or if a ship would bring them to Earth. That was why she had gone out to inspect an American base, to see whether the troops there were prepared for an air raid. The reports sent up by platoons to the battalion all stated everything was as it should be, which was her first warning that everything was not as it should be. It only took four knuckleheaded E4s and their entrepreneurial moonshine business to show her that the force could be in big trouble. "Very well. Since none of you know anything about that still in the woods, we are going to march over there right now, where I will watch you take it apart. Then you will use the materials to make this..." She kicked up a clod of mud to splash into what was supposed to be an air raid shelter. "Pigsty into something that..." Her phone sounded an alarm. As she looked up, her eyes automatically attracted to lights in the sky. Everyone's phone sounded the same alarm. Air raid warning red, she knew from the alarm tone, not needing to read the text.
"Shit!" Yossarian yelped and grabbed her arm, yanking her forward. "General! Ma'am!" He pointed to a swampy pond 50 meters away. "Get in the water!"
"No!" She shook him off. "We can..." Yossarian would not let go, looking to the east in terror and jabbing a finger at the sight. The eastern sky was bright, with a wide violet-colored curtain flickering and pulsing like a living thing. She recognized the phenomena from training videos. It was a starship maser beam set on wide dispersal anti-personnel setting, burning or boiling anything it touched. It was coming right for them. Her legs had her running before she knew she had made a decision to jump into the water. Yossarian was right beside her, slowing his stride so she would not fall behind, though the young soldier was certainly as frightened as she was. They ran into the murky dark water, splashing in up to their knees, then the bottom dropped off, and she fell forward to splash face first below the surface. The water was chilly and discolored, and it smelled like rotted algae.
Coming up for air, she felt for the bottom with her toes and couldn't find it. Everyone in her party was now in the water, no one left on shore. She heard a loud sizzling sound and turned to the east, just as a hand smacked the top of her head and pushed her under the water. Blowing out, though she wanted to breathe air in, she flailed her arms to dive deeper, feeling muck touch her fingertips. Closing her eyes tightly, she found something that felt like a sunken log and clutched it so she wouldn't float to the surface. The slimy surface of the log slipped through her fingers. She had to get a hand around and under it to... The water flash heated as the purple beam swept across it, and her skin was on fire, making her cry out in pain and gulp in water and mud and whatever scum floated in the pond. She felt bubbles rise up as rotted plant material on the bottom of the pond was released, and she lost her grip on the log, popping to the surface and prepared to die in quick agony.
"I got you. I got you, ma'am,"
a voice came faintly into her ear. Daring to crack open one eye, she saw a thick fog of steam coming off the pond.
"Who? It's me, Yosarian," the voice said as she was pulled backward until she was sitting on her backside in muck, her shoulders above the water.
There were more voices shouting in the distance.
"It's okay," Yosarian said loudly in her ear. "Everyone accounted for. We got lucky."
"Lucky?" Cracking an eye open again, she looked at the soldier. His skin was beet red and oily, like a very bad sunburn. Her own face felt the same, or worse. Around her, figures wreathed in fog were struggling through the muck toward the shore.
"Everyone," she coughed as she spoke, "stay in the water. We don't know how many ships are up there."
The figures turned around, walking back into the murky water. She did not know how many ships were up there, but she was going to find out, she thought, as she pulled a Z-phone from her pocket, wincing, because the skin of her hands was red and puffy. UNIF HQ would know, if headquarters still existed.
"Holy shit!" Skippy gasped.
Valkyrie had come through the backstop wormhole and immediately turned toward Checkpoint Bravo to get instructions for approaching our home planet. Without Skippy being in our solar system, there was no micro-wormhole to provide convenient instant communication between the checkpoint and Earth, so whatever instructions we found there might be out of date. Procedure is procedure, so we followed orders anyway.
"Joe, before you ask what, give me a minute. Lots to process here."
Instead of replying, I turned toward the communications station. The warrant officer there was U.S. Air Force. Her face was white as she pressed a hand over her ear to hear better. I saw her swallow, and her expression registered shock. Before she...
"Pilot!" Skippy shouted. "Jump option Delta! Now!"
We jumped. The pilots had standing orders for me to take instructions directly from Skippy in such emergencies. It wasn't the best jump we ever performed. It also wasn't the worst. Fighting a wave of nausea and the feeling that pressure in my skull would burst my eyeballs, I squeezed my eyes tightly shut.
"Sit rep.
The ship is fine,"
Skippy said in a voice that had a distinctive quaver to it. He was shocked. He was scared.
"What is...
They hit Earth."
"The bastards,"
he spat angrily.
"Who is they? What happened?"
"A task force of Bosphorak and Thorenan warships, 3 days ago."
"Oh my.
The boss, they did it. But the Maxalks ordered the attack, you can be sure of it."
Skippy was pissed, like out of control.
"Oh, when I get a hold of those..."
"Skippy, focus, please. What happened?"
16 ships, half Bosphorak and half Thorenan. They conducted a raid. It was quick. They must have been worried Valkyrie would arrive and kick their asses. 23 minutes from arrival to jumping away. You want a BDA?"
It was jarring to hear Skippy use military jargon. He meant a battle damage assessment, except there hadn't been a battle. The attack was a one-sided slaughter.
"Yes. They destroyed the Yuki-Shan and the Dagger. I mean, the Unity. Oh, fuck it. Whatever those ships are called, they blew them to hell, along with the multi-mission modules. On the ground, there were railgun impacts where the UN headquarters was in New York and UNEF Command in Geneva. Joe, there is a crater extending from 3rd Avenue in Manhattan to Vermont Street across the river. It's filled with water from the East River. The Chrysler Building fell into the crater."
"Jesus.
I breathed, wincing at myself. Blasphemy was an especially bad idea right then. New York City was a big maze to me. I wasn't familiar with the streets he mentioned, though I had seen the Chrysler Building. For it to fall over, the damage to the area must be bad. Is there anything we can... He ignored me. They also hit 9 other sites around the planet, technology centers and factories that were working on upgrading your manufacturing capability. The advanced materials facilities in Beijing and Palmdale were wiped out. Joe, without those materials... Yeah, I know. Without the exotic and specialized materials those facilities were trying to make, we could not continue modifying ships for our fleet. The last status report I read estimated it would take another 4 years before those plants could make enough high-quality materials for full production. Even when that happened, Earth would need dozens of other facilities to make all the exotic materials we needed. The aliens had hit us, but it would not make a major difference in the short term. The attacking ships left? They're gone? 16 second-tier warships could pose a problem for Valkyrie, and I assumed there might be more ships than just the ones that participated in the raid. We could fight Boss Farrakh and Theran in ships, but we could not both fight and render assistance to our home world. They are gone, yes. That jump we did was just a precaution to give me time to assess the data. Multiple jump signatures were detected near backstop. They went out through the wormhole. Unless, you know, they left some stealth ships behind. The number of outbound jump signatures matches the inbound number? Yes. All the ships in the raid definitely jumped away. Take us in, I ordered. High orbit. I want the ship above jump altitude at all times.
Believe me, Captain Ottavio Scarandum shook his head sadly, his antennas drooping and swaying side to side. We are as shocked as you are. We do not believe that. The representative of the Rindaloo said with anger, the sack of her pendulous belly puffing outward. Her people had good reason to be angry. After assuring their patrons that they were freezing movement toward an alliance with humans, the Jirapta were supposed to also halt preparations to deliver a second group of obsolete warships to the humans. Those ships, according to what the Jirapta told their patrons, would be secured, dispersed, and have vital components removed to render them not flightworthy. Instead, 43 of the 65 ships had disappeared. Among the missing ships were not just obsolete units, but also 2 new fleet support units with state-of-the-art fabricators, plus 4 cargo vessels that were heavily laden with hard-to-find minerals and exotic materials. Those ships had been stolen, according to the Jirapta, who claimed to be outraged by the completely unexpected event.
I do not know what else to tell you. Scarandum's antennas dipped in his version of a shrug. This is a heinous crime. I promise there will be a full investigation. There certainly will. We will participate in the investigation of this perfidy.
Scarandum nodded, bowing his head low in deference to the exalted patrons of his people.
We welcome any assistance in resolving this matter. I welcome your involvement. My government has tasked me with tracking those ships and identifying the culprits. You? The haughty Rindaloo sputtered. The investigation is being conducted by the Ethics and Compliance Office?
Of course, the ECO captain acted surprised by the question. We must, I am ashamed to say, consider the possibility that this crime was partially an inside job. Sensitive information or access to the ships might have been obtained through threats, extortion, or blackmail. Or, he did not add, bribes that were much less expensive than ECO had been prepared to pay. Naturally, because it was his bargaining skills that knocked down the price, he pocketed the leftover funds in accordance with unwritten ECO standard practice. The spider blinked slowly.
The ECO... Investigating a crime is like... She shook her head. No matter. Captain Scarandum, we will hold you personally responsible for locating those ships.
Of course. There is one rather delicate question I must ask before we begin to review the unfortunately limited set of data about the incident.
What is the question?
This is embarrassing, but... You did not steal those ships, did you? I will take that as a no, then. He made a note on his tablet. Shall we begin?
UNEF Command and the U.S. government and the U.S. Army, and possibly the Salvation Army, were all screaming to talk with me when Valkyrie appeared in orbit. We had jumped in above New York City to get a direct look at the damage. That wasn't necessary. We could have been above Australia and still seen the damage via satellite camera, but I thought it was important to show our concern. The city was a mess. There was indeed a ragged crater taking a bite out of Manhattan's east side, also possibly part of Brooklyn or Queens. I didn't know that area well enough to see a dramatic difference in the shoreline there. What I could see was widespread devastation. If there were any windows intact within 5 miles of the blast center, it had to be a miracle. Our view was obscured by a thin veil of smoke from many small fires that extended west into New Jersey and east into Long Island. Oh, hell. Why did they hit the UN building? That makes no... Joe, the Bosphorok left a long, profanity-laced diatribe against UNEF. They are pissed that humans manipulated the Maxalts into punishing them, and they assume the operation was planned and managed by the UN. Oh, shit. I felt sick. This is all my... Sims reached over and squeezed my hand. She didn't speak. All she did was look me in the eye and shake her head once. The message was clear. This was not my fault. She was wrong about that. The birds hitting Earth was my fault. The deception op to frame them for the actions I ordered was entirely my doing. There was no denying the truth of that. It was also true that if we hadn't acted to frame another group for hitting the Maxalts, Earth would have suffered a worse fate. Suck it up, Bishop, I told myself. The past can't be changed. What I could do was to focus on preventing another attack. Skippy, connect me with Chang. I need background before I talk with UNEF and... Sorry, Joe, no can do. Chang is at a hospital in Philadelphia. His plane was coming into JFK when the Bosphorok struck the UN building and got caught by the shockwave. The plane went down at sea. 43 people died in the crash. Oh my. Chang is expected to recover. He would recover faster if we could bring him up here. Valkyrie's medical facilities are more... Can you do anything for him in Philly? I knew Kong. He would not want special treatment when many others were suffering worse trauma. Wait, how much medical supplies can we spare to send Dirtside? Skippy didn't answer right away. I understand you want to help, Joe. The question is, how much do we need for whatever you plan to do next? If we take the fleet at Jaguar into action, we could run out of medical nano-treatment capacity in 1 day. Sir? Sims knew I was struggling. Contact UNEF. They should decide how to deploy our medical gear. UNEF. Right. I took a breath and pressed a button to connect me with whoever was the UNEF command duty officer. This is Bishop. The physical damage to Earth was limited. Outside of the strike areas, everything looked normal. Pretty much normal, unless you looked hard enough. There was a lot less traffic on the roads and in the skies. Some places on the night side were shocking when viewed from space. It looked like power had been knocked out, like what happened on Columbus Day. That wasn't true. The aliens had not bothered with Earth's electricity generation and transmission infrastructure. Sections of the continents were dark because local governments there had ordered a curfew and blackout, as if lack of artificial light made targeting more difficult for starship sensors. A blackout had zero practical value other than making people feel they were doing something, that they had some control over their fates. That was a sentiment I understood. The people of Earth faced the uncertainty of whether they would survive to see the next day, whether unstoppable alien warships would appear in the sky without warning to bombard our world from orbit. One thing was certain. UNEF Command wanted the reassuring presence of Valkyrie hanging above everyone's heads. When our orbit took us into Earth's shadow, we turned on all our navigation lights and sent a pair of dropships out to illuminate the hull with powerful floodlights. What we actually should have done was cloak the ship in a stealth field so the enemy would know our battlecruiser was on guard, but not present an easy target. The experienced military leaders of UNEF Command understood that,
The civilians above them in the chain of command argued that it was equally important to show the public that our homeworld had some protection. The coldly practical side of me thought it was foolish to compromise security for the sake of giving people a warm, fuzzy feeling that was entirely false. If a large number of alien ships hit Earth again, we could make the raiders pay a price, but we could not prevent deadly weapons from raining down on the surface. The human side of me understood the value of making the public feel some measure of security. Social order all over the planet was fragile. Many city dwellers had bugged out after the raid, dispersing to areas that were less likely targets. Those areas were straining to accommodate the sudden influx of people, and there was friction with local residents who resented the newcomers. Valkyrie was not the only military asset not going anywhere. I was ordered to remain aboard with the ship at battle stations around the clock. Sims was stuck aboard with me. UNEF Command decided I needed an experienced XO, and I wholeheartedly agreed. After a week, I pleaded with Command to rotate part of my crew dirtside and bring aboard fresh replacements. It would be a good opportunity for training, I argued, and a burned-out crew was not optimal for combat readiness. Command relented, and even allowed Sims to go to the surface for a briefing, though she flew back immediately. My parents? Yeah, they bugged out too, went to my uncle's fishing camp for the duration. They were safe, had plenty of food stocked away, and although much of the world's public was pissed at me for failing to provide the absolute security that I warned them was not possible, my folks were doing okay. They were worried about me, which shows how little I know about being a parent. 1 week, then two, dragged on, with Valkyrie on high alert and nothing happening. Then, an alien ship appeared in a burst of gamma rays. The alien ship, after making my heart stop, was just a Jarapta light cruiser. After seeing the identification system tag the ship as a friendly, my heart skipped a beat again, hoping the Beatles had changed their minds about working with us. No such luck. They had come to Earth for two reasons, neither of them good for us. First, they heard about the raid because the Maxalts Coalition, especially the boss Varrock, were boasting far and wide about the deed. The Beatles had come to check on the safety of their diplomatic personnel and to bring them home. There were 14 Jarapta diplomats on Earth, and during the raid, fortunately, 11 of them were on a fact-finding tour of casinos in Macau. Another 3 were on a cultural exchange visit to India, where the culture apparently involves furious wagering on cricket matches. Anyway, all of the Beatles were safe and healthy, though not happy. They were happy, until they learned their government was pulling them off Earth simply due to one isolated and rather limited raid. UNEF let the Beatles round up their own people, wisely not getting involved in alien affairs. It was amusing that after all the diplomats had been rounded up, there was a search for 6 more from the crew who had jumped in. Again, UNEF let the Beatles handle it. Second, the Jarapta had come to deliver bad news. While the Boss Varrock and Theranin were hitting Earth, a Boss Varrock squadron had struck the human-occupied area of Paradise. Initial estimates, all that were available before the ship left for Earth, were over 600 dead and at least 1,100 seriously wounded. Most of the dead and injured were humans, though a few dozen Ruhar had been hit as collateral damage. A small but very vocal group of hamsters were calling for their government to eject the unwanted humans from their world. Shit. We had no means for pulling our people off Paradise. Sure, eventually we would have 6 assault transports, but not for months. And while Skippy was at Earth, those transports were stuck at the ass end of the galaxy. UNEF inquired about whether the sure thing was available and were politely told no. It was also politely requested that if we did see that particular ship, could we please inform the Jarapta authorities? It seemed that Captain Gumbano and his valiant crew had double-crossed the wrong people, and now both sides of the transaction wanted Gumbano's head as a trophy. We could not count on any help from the Jarapta, so reluctantly, that ship jumped away, and once again, we were alone. Half of the galaxy hated us, the other half would not lift a finger or claw or tentacle to help us. Valkyrie resumed its lonely patrol, and I sat in my office worrying, counting the days until we would have to return the Jaguar. Days until Earth would be totally defenseless.
Joe, Skippy interrupted my gloomy thoughts. You'd better look at this. I found something interesting.
What?
It's a message, hidden inside one of the official communications from the Jirapatha.
Hidden? Why?
I suspect the purpose of concealing the message is so that only I could find it. The encryption is fairly sophisticated, and I only found the message when I noticed a very subtle recurring glitch in the data file under the official communication.
The message is for you?
No, the message is addressed to you or to Colonel Perkins.
To me?
Yes, it's from a friend of yours. A Captain Scarandum?
Oh, shit, let me see it.
If the Ethics and Compliance Office was involved, it was no surprise that the message had been hidden.
This can't be good news.
The universe hates me. That is a well-established fact, proven over the years. Really, I did not fault the universe for hating me. It had tried many times to kill me, had several golden opportunities to rid itself of my existence, yet somehow, here I am, still breathing. Unless I'm dead and someone forgot to tell me. I mean, I guess that's possible. Anyway, this time, either the universe decided to throw me a bone, or it figured I had enough trouble to deal with already. Or it was setting me up for a bigger fall later. Whatever. All I know is, the message from Captain Scarandum was not what I expected. Sims, I jabbed the intercom button. Get in here, please.
Sir?
She was only slightly out of breath from dashing around the corner from the bridge. Sit down, Exo. You're not going to believe this, but our friends the Beatles have some good news for us.
The Beatles?
She looked at me sideways, squinting to check I hadn't been drinking.
Their ships jumped away yesterday. How do you have news from...
They left a secret message for Skippy. He just found it.
Hey, the beer can protested. I wasn't looking for it, you numbskull. How was I supposed to know the...
Ignoring him, I held up a hand to block his blah blah blah.
The message is about that second group of ships, the ones that the Beatles decided not to transfer to us.
What about them?
I know this is going to shock you, but apparently most of them were stolen quite recently under very mysterious circumstances.
She snorted.
Let me guess. The Ethics and Compliance Office is investigating?
I nodded. They are determined to find and punish the perpetrators of this horrible crime. ECO wants our help.
Us?
Yes. While they scour the galaxy for those missing ships, they want us to check one particular star system just in case those ships are there.
Just in case?
Oh. She caught on quickly.
Is this an if-you-know-what-I-mean sort of thing?
I have no idea what you are talking about. I shrugged. The odds are against us finding those ships. But
those rat bastard Beatles are hedging their bets, aren't they?
Sounds like it, I agreed. I hope they are. Exo, we need those ships. UNEF Command wants us here. But damn it, Valkyrie alone can't protect Earth. Even if we could, we can't do it forever. Eventually, this ship needs to go offline for a maintenance cycle, and we can't risk doing that here.
You're preaching to the choir, sir. What do you want me to do?
Help me craft a message, so when I inform Command about the second batch of ships, they will approve us going out to get them. The ECO captain who sent the message warned that this is a very limited-time offer.
Sims nodded. She was always better with words than I was.
Command isn't the problem. They take orders from their governments, including our government.
She arched an eyebrow at me.
I took that to mean she didn't care about my bullshit dual citizenship in Skippy's fake country. The public is scared. They want to know Valkyrie is up here protecting them. No political leader will approve us flying away.
Yeah, I grinned.
I have a thought about that.